This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 1 Samuel. Now, here's Pastor Sandy in the book of 1 Samuel chapter 1 with today's edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
Since Genesis chapter 1, this is our 61st study this time through the Bible. So in the last 61 studies, we've been able to make it all the way up to 1 Samuel. That's 236 chapters. How many of you have been with us now since Genesis chapter 1? Yeah, bunch of hands go up. So here's what we've done. Here's what we've done so far. There are 929 chapters in the Old Testament. You got it? 929 chapters. We've now studied 236. That means that we are now quarter of a way through the Old Testament. How about that? You didn't think you could do that, did you? We are well on the way. 236 chapters tonight. We're going to cover three more. 1 Samuel chapters 1 through 3. The life of the prophet Samuel was a stream of unbroken faithfulness to God. Plot Samuel's years on a timeline, and you'll find no breaks for rebellion, no seasons of sowing wild oats, no lapses of spiritual laziness, no bouts with moral compromise. Samuel's mother dedicated him to God from his infancy, and Samuel remained devoted to the Lord for the remainder of his long life. Samuel's life is an example of what I call compound godliness. Now, when you open up a money market at the local bank, you expect to benefit from some compound interest. The money you make makes more money. The interest rolls back into the investment. It feeds on itself. It builds and grows and snowballs. And the same principle applies to spiritual investments. The person who lives for God receives compound benefits. A heart devoted to purity grows increasingly pure. A mind fixed on heavenly thoughts becomes more and more elevated in its thinking. A will bent toward God grows in the direction of that bend. It leans out further towards God. A spirit willing to muster faith adds muscle to that faith. Jesus says in Luke chapter 8, verse 18, "Whoever has, to him more will be given." This was Samuel. Years of compounded purity and loyalty and faith and listening to God all added up. It compounded into a man of character. This man, Samuel, was a man of integrity and spiritual stature. His years of godly living had bestowed on Samuel an authority that enabled him to hold this nation in check and to usher in a new age in Israel's history. In Jeremiah chapter 15, verse 1, the Lord is bemoaning the sin of a future generation when he makes this statement, "Even if Moses and Samuel stood before me, my mind would not be favorable toward this people." Notice, though, God himself lumps Moses and Samuel into the same category. Both were powerful intercessors. Guys, here's why young people particularly need to live your life for Jesus. It's because faithfulness compounds like interest. A life devoted to Jesus at an early age not only benefits you now, but the years of godly living will grow into a stature and an authority that God will use mightily. Make too many withdrawals from God. Don't let godliness have an opportunity to accrue. Create too many lapses on the timeline, and you will certainly lose out. In the days of Samuel, God needed a man of stature and influence to lead the nation through a transition period. You see, Samuel was the last judge, and he was the first prophet. The prophets were men that God would raise up to speak his word to the kings of Israel. Samuel was the prophet who oversaw the beginnings of Israel's monarchy. He anointed the first two kings, Saul and David, and he gave them needed instruction. Samuel's ministry was similar to the ministry of John the Baptist. Both were lifelong Nazarites, and both were forerunners of Davidic kings. Samuel served David first in that divinely appointed lineage, whereas John served Jesus, the last of that same lineage, and of course, heir to the promises of God that he had made to David. Samuel is often called the prophet of prayer, and on several occasions we'll see him rallying the nation to pray. As we read in Jeremiah 15, he was a mighty intercessor. In fact, when he died, the entire nation gathered to Samuel's home in Ramah to mourn his death. The people of Israel loved Samuel because they knew that he had loved them. Well, the story of Samuel begins in chapter 1. Now, there was a certain man of Ramathaim Zophim of the mountains of Ephraim, and his name was Elkanah, the son of Jeroham, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zuph, an Ephraimite. And he had two wives. The name of one was Hannah, and the name of the other, Peninnah. Good southern girl, Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. Once Mark Twain was challenged by a bigamous Mormon to quote a verse that would prohibit bigamy. Twain answered, "That's easy. No man can serve two masters." God's ideal for marriage was one man and one woman in a lifelong relationship. God tolerated polygamy or bigamy as he does divorce today, but it was never his intention. Recently, Middle Eastern archaeologists have unearthed a cuneiform tablet. Maybe you've read about this in the news. That what they deciphered and they read, and it was entitled, "The Top 10 Reasons No Man in His Right Mind Would Want Two Wives." And here's the translation from the ancient Semitic Chaldean. Number 10, twice as many birthdays and anniversaries to remember. Number 9, you have to pick who gets the second garage door opener. Number 8, by the time two wives take a shower, there's no more hot water. Number 7, who can afford 24 roses on Valentine's Day? Number 6, when it comes to choices, it's now 2 against 1. Number 5, your one drawer and half a foot of closet space gets cut in half. Number 4, 2 honey-do lists. Number 3, do you really want to decide who gets the master bedroom? Number 2 mother-in-laws. And the number 1 reason no man in his right mind would want two wives, PMS twice a month. Well, apparently Elkanah had never read this top 10 list, for if he had, he would have added one more reason why two wives are not a good idea. They might not get along. Polygamy can spawn fierce competition. It doesn't take long for brides to become rivals. The husband and kids end up caught in the middle of wifely warfare. Verse 3 tells us, "This man went up from his city yearly to worship and sacrifice to the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. Also the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, the priests of the Lord, were there. Elkanah and his family would make their annual pilgrimage to the tabernacle. They would go up to observe the Jewish feast. And whenever the time came for Elkanah to make an offering, he would give portions to Peninnah his wife and to all her sons and daughters, but to Hannah he would give a double portion, for he loved Hannah, although the Lord had closed her womb." What a provocative comment. The Lord had closed her womb. Did you know that God is sovereign over all things, including human conception? The Lord can close a womb. The Lord can open a womb. And at times, he will do both. Childbearing couples need to trust the Lord. Hannah loved the Lord. She was a godly woman. If all Hannah had to cope with was God's will for her life, she probably wouldn't have gotten so upset. Hannah could trust the Lord exclusively. but it was this Peninnah that was causing all the trouble in her life. Verse 6, and her rival also provoked her severely to make her miserable because the Lord had closed her womb. This phrase, to make her miserable, could be translated to violently agitate. Literally, it refers to a thunder clash. In other words, Hannah was an emotional storm because of Peninnah. In ancient times, barrenness was the heaviest burden that a woman could bear. It carried the stigma of a curse, but the digs from her rival had made matters worse. Well, there's no doubt that Peninnah was a jerk. But Elkanah had exacerbated the problem. You see, he loved Hannah, and he hated to see her suffer. And so to compensate, Elkanah gave her these special favors. At the tabernacle, it was a double portion of the sacrifice. But I imagine Elkanah gave Hannah twice as much of everything. Probably twice his time and twice the grocery money. And 2 weeks of vacation to Peninnah's one. And double the mad money. And one of those minivans with the two sliding side doors rather than Peninnah's traditional model. And how do you think Peninnah reacted to Elkanah's extra shows of affection? She hated it. And she retaliated by bombarding Hannah with little cutting comments, little biting barbs. Peninnah would brag about how well her children were doing in front of Hannah. And then she would make comments like, and what about your kids? Oops, I'm sorry. I'm sure it was all that Hannah could do to keep from slapping the old girl silly. Spilling coffee in her lap or something. And so it was, catch this, year by year. Year, long year by long year. Can you imagine? When she went up to the house of the Lord, that she provoked her, therefore she wept and did not eat. Hannah could steer clear of Peninnah around the house. She managed to live a separate life. Her daily routine avoided contact with her rival, but once a year, these two wives shared a common space. Every year, Elkanah loaded up the family in the minivan and made his pilgrimage to Shiloh, where he worshiped God at the tabernacle. And this is where the sparks would fly between Hannah and Peninnah. Every chance she got, Peninnah would stick it to Hannah. Another dig, another poke, another slap in the face. Hannah loved God, but boy, did she hate these trips. The conflict between her and Peninnah spoiled her worship. It distracted her focus from the Lord. What should have been a joyous occasion, a joyous celebration, ended up being a miserable time of exasperation. I'm sure that Peninnah would have preferred to just stay home alone. But the tabernacle was God's house. It was Hannah's duty to meet with others and to worship at Shiloh. It was commanded by God. Staying home sounded appealing, but it wasn't an option acceptable to the Lord. Guys, here is a lesson to us. We too are liable to meet a Peninnah at God's house. People at church, other people can be jealous of your fruitfulness. They can become a source of irritation and frustration and aggravation for you. And our temptation is to just stay home alone. Why should I have to put up with that Peninnah? But you see, staying home from the house of God is never an option. At least not an option acceptable to God. Hebrews 10 verse 25 instructs every believer to not forsake the assembling of ourselves together. Guys, don't let a Peninnah rob you of the fellowship and encouragement and worship and opportunities to serve that we glean when we all meet together. God knows all about Peninnah, and yet he still wants you to be involved in your church. Well, in verse 7, Hannah is so upset she can't eat. She's sulking during supper. Elkanah tries to cheer her up in verse 8. Her husband said to her, "Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? And why is your heart grieved? Am I not better to you than 10 sons?" He loved his wife, certainly. He hated to see her so upset. But Hannah arose after they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh. She went up to the tabernacle to pour out her soul to the Lord. Now Eli the priest was sitting on the seat by the doorpost of the tabernacle of the Lord. And she was in bitterness of soul and prayed to the Lord and wept in anguish. Then she made a vow and said, "O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your maidservant and remember me and not forget your maidservant, but you will give your maidservant a male child, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall come upon his head." Hannah asks the Lord for a baby boy, and she makes a twofold vow. First, if God answers her request, she'll see to it that this little boy serves the Lord his whole life long. She'll take him to the tabernacle, she'll turn him over to the priests, and she will enroll him in the ministry. Second, she also says that she'll take a vow and her son will become a lifelong Nazarite. Now, you remember what a Nazarite was. Samson was a Nazarite. The Nazarite was a walking billboard for the virtues and the values of God's kingdom. It was a threefold vow. First of all, he stayed clear of the grape soda. He found his pleasure in the spiritual things, not in the physical. He never cut his locks. Attractiveness for the Nazarite was found internally, not externally. And he avoided contact with the dead, anything that was dead. His life stood for eternal, not temporal pursuits. Samson was also a Nazarite. But the problem with Samson was that he had too many lapses in his timeline. Too many withdrawals from godliness. Faithfulness failed to accrue in Samson's life and therefore failed to turn into character. And as a result, in times of testing, Samson yielded to temptation and ended up violating his vow. You see, it's amazing. Samson and Samuel were alike outwardly, but they were very opposite inwardly. Well, I love Hannah's prayer. "Remember me and not forget your maidservant." After we got married, for 2 years, Kathy and I tried to have a child, but to no avail. And I witnessed firsthand the passionate prayers of a barren woman. Boy, did Kathy pray. And somewhere along the line, she latched on to Hannah's words here, and she kept praying this prayer, "Lord, remember me. Lord, remember me." In May of 1982, we attended a pastor's conference where Kathy asked the wives, the pastor's wives, to pray for her that she would have a child. And as they prayed, one of the ladies spoke a word of prophecy. And through this lady, the Lord said, "By this time next year, you will have a child." Now, this was the last weekend in May 1982. To make a long story short, Zach was born May the 29th, 1983, 1 year to the date. The very same weekend Zach was born, we were truly blessed. And in light of Kathy's prayer and Hannah's prayer, they prayed the same prayer, we named our son Zachary, which means remembered of the Lord. Wow, the power of a passionate prayer. James 5, verse 17 is true. The effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. Pour out your soul to God and He'll pour out blessings on you. Your youth pastor's proof. Verse 12. And it happened as she continued praying before the Lord that Eli watched her mouth. Now Hannah spoke in her... I'm trying to teach my boys to watch their mouth too, by the way. Now Hannah spoke in her heart, only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. Therefore, Eli thought she was drunk. I mean, Hannah's prayer was so passionate, so raw, so emotional that Eli thought she was tipsy. Who's this drunk woman coming into the tabernacle? Her lips moved, but no words came out. She was praying from her heart. You see, unlike most folks who came to the synagogue, Hannah's goal was not to impress the bystanders, but to do business with God. When you pray, is that your goal? To do business with God. You've got to think it was no accident that the man who was called the prophet of prayer had a mother who put it to practice. I have no doubt that Samuel gained his passion for prayer, the power he had in prayer, from his godly mother, Hannah. You know, there is a difference between saying prayers and praying prayers. It's a huge difference. Too many people have turned prayer into a performance. It's the point in the Sunday program where a man stands up and he prays to the people, not really to God. Once there was a man who stood up in church and he shouted out his prayer, and one little boy whispered in his mom's ear, "Wow, if that man lived closer to God, I bet he wouldn't have to shout so loud." Probably true. Hannah prayed like her prayer mattered. Do you pray like your prayer matters? Well, one thing's for sure, prayers that don't matter to you here on earth will certainly not matter to God in heaven. So Eli said to her, "How long will you be drunk? Put your wine away from you." And Hannah answered and said, "No, my Lord, I am a woman of sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor intoxicating drink, but have poured out my soul before the Lord. Do not consider your maidservant a wicked woman, for out of the abundance of my complaint and grief, I have spoken until now." Then Eli answered and said, "Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant your petition, which you have asked of him." 9 months later, God did just that. And she said, "Let your maidservant find favor in your sight." And so the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. Then they rose early in the morning and worshiped before the Lord and returned and came to their house at Ramah. And Elkanah knew Hannah, his wife, and the Lord remembered her. And so it came to pass in the process of time that Hannah conceived and bore a son and called his name Samuel, saying, "Because I have asked for him from the Lord." And the word Samuel means heard by God. Now, the man Elkanah and his wife went up to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and his vow. But Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, "Now until the child is weaned, then I will take him, that he may appear before the Lord and remain there forever." And Elkanah, her husband, said to her, "Do what seems best to you until you have weaned him. Only let the Lord establish his word." And so the woman stayed and nursed her son until she had weaned him. Now when she had weaned him, she took him up with her with three bulls, one ephah of flour and a skin of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord in Shiloh. And the child was young. Then they slaughtered a bull and brought the child to Eli. And she said, "Oh, my Lord, as your soul lives, my Lord, I am the woman who stood by you here praying to the Lord." And I love Hannah's beautiful words in verse 27. "For this child I prayed, and the Lord has granted me my petition, which I ask of him. Therefore, I also have lent him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he shall be lent to the Lord." So they worship the Lord there.
That's all we have time for on this edition of Sandy Adams Radio. If you're interested in hearing today's message in the book of 1 Samuel again, or want to listen to more teachings from Pastor Sandy, we invite you to visit our website, sandyadams.org. You'll find a complete archive of his messages taught through the Bible, as well as a link to download our mobile app. While you're there, be sure to visit the shop. You'll find several resources available for purchase to add to your personal studies of God's Word, including books written by Pastor Sandy. Just look under the Resources tab at sandyadams.org. Do you live in the Atlanta area, or are you visiting soon? If so, we'd love to meet you in person. Join us at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain on Sunday mornings for a time of worship, Bible study, and fellowship. Feel free to come just as you are. Look for the link under the About tab to find service times, directions, and more information. Otherwise, feel free to give us a call at 770-736-2828. That's 770-736-2828. When you call, please let us know how we can be lifting you up in prayer. Would you mind praying for us too? We can't do any of this without the loving guidance of our God. Thanks for praying for us. Pastor Sandy has more to share next time here on Sandy Adams Radio.